Welcome to Inside the Draft, a weekly preview of the upcoming NFL Draft with insiders from around the country.
This is Jeffrey Gorman coming to you live from the Indiana Union Construction Industry Studios. Inside the Draft, joined by Matt Taylor, voice of the Colts, Casey Ballier, also here today. Guys, NFL Draft Day, it is Thursday, that first rounder, and of course the second and third rounds on Friday.
It's here.
You're going to be a busy man, Mate. Not that you're not, Casey, but Mate, what do you got on Thursday? What do you got on Friday?
Well, we're all doing the draft show coming up tonight. Tonight, first round, Thursday night, we'll be up at Top Golf all night long until the end of the first round up at the Colts season ticket member party. Top Golf up in Fishers. We'll all be there. Rick Venturi is going to be the star of the show. Open up that noggin of his let all that draft knowledge just come spewing out. The draft show that we do is a Colts talk show with the draft in the background.
That's
the
right.
The context of the draft.
Come on in.
How do all these players relate to the teams that they're being picked up by? How do they relate to the Colts? How do these selections in front of the Colts impact their draft board? It's a big Colts dialogue, and I think the diehards love it. It's going to be streamed on Colts.com and the Colts mobile app, and then on tonight, 93.5 and 107.5, The Fan. Tomorrow night, because of Pacer coverage, we're going to air on 93 WIBC until the end of the third round, and then once the Pacers are over, The Fan will pick back up radio-wise. But just to keep it simple, to keep it clean, we're streaming all weekend long on the Colts website, Colts.com, and the Colts mobile app.
And Casey Ballier, also, we know you're what you bring to this table, and those are those one-on-one closed-door meetings with general manager Chris Ballard. So what are we doing? Well, what do we got going in this first round, Case?
In order for me to continue to have those one-on-one closed-door meetings, I can't tell you anything.
Absolutely nothing. Casey, you'll be up there at Topgolf as well.
I will be, yes.
We'll be bringing you 2 days, and then, of course, updates as far as the third conclusion day of the NFL draft on Saturday. Fellas, let's talk some football and some draft. This gentleman is responsible for Randy Moss. Okay, how about that? This man is responsible for the likes of John Randall. I'm talking about Minnesota Viking greats, bringing in Jeff Diamond, former VP and general manager of the Minnesota Vikings and former president and COO of the Tennessee Titans. He's a former NFL Executive of the Year. He went 15-1 1 year, don't forget, in 1998 with those Vikings. We bring in Jeff Diamond. Jeff, we appreciate you being here today.
Hey, thanks, guys. Always happy to join you.
I love talking to you about this because why? Your boots are muddy. You've been there. You've been in those war rooms. You've been in those draft weekends that have happened. So I'm going to ask you this. With this upcoming draft, with the amount of quarterbacks that seem to be rising in this first round, do you see some trades happening across the board, and what are they, Jeff?
Oh, I definitely see a lot of trades. I think it could be a record year for trades. Oh. And not only involving quarterbacks, but I think – And draft picks flip-flopping back and forth. I think there could be a lot of trades of some veteran players with teams that have salary cap issues for the future. Look at a team like Denver, for example, with that Russell Wilson albatross that they've got, the $85 million dead money. And that's a team that could well want to trade up into the top four or five, shall we say, to get a J.J. McCarthy, a Drake May, for example, and they have some chips that they could use. They could trade, for example, an all-pro corner in Patrick Surtain, who has about a $20 million potential cap number next year on his fifth-year option. So those are the kind of maneuvers that could happen. Guys like Brandon Ayuk could be moving from San Francisco, Buda Baker from Arizona, Alvin Kamara from New Orleans. Mm. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. Zach Wilson is already on the move, which we expected. But I think in terms of actually teams trying to move to draft, obviously the goal is going to be to get a quarterback in this really quarterback-rich draft. And you've got really four probably top guys, and then you add Michael Penix Jr. and Bo Nix to the mix, who could sneak into the first round or early second round. And so I think you're going to see teams jockeying for those guys. And I'm looking at, obviously, the Vikings, post-Kirk Cousins. I don't think they want to hitch their wagon to Sam Darnold, shall we say, in totality. So I definitely look for the Vikings after they made the trade with Houston to get that extra first-round pick at number 23. They've got number 11. They've got some pretty good firepower to get up. And I think they probably are figuring, if they want to get either May or McCarthy after Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels will almost certainly go 1-2. If they want to get into that top four, it's pretty obvious that they're going to have to parlay those two first-round picks and maybe a third or fourth rounder next year to Arizona at number four, possibly to the Chargers at number five, to get into that top four or five to get either Mayer or McCarthy. I would think that their thinking is that they probably have to go to the top four to make sure they get one of those guys. Because Denver's looming, you've got the Raiders that are looming, and potentially the Giants, if they're ready to move on from Daniel Jones, which I'm not so convinced that that's the case, because I think Daniel Jones had a really good 2022 season. He won a playoff game in Minnesota, and then he gets hurt last year. He's got a bunch of dead money, so they're not going to let him go this year. And so if you draft a quarterback in the top four, he's going to have to sit for a year. I think there's a lot of smoke from the Giants on that, because I think they would love to see teams draft quarterbacks high, and I think that's where a team like the Colts play into that thinking, that the more quarterbacks that go early, then more position players fall
right
to a team such as Indianapolis at number 15. So it's going to be a fascinating draft. I think it's going to be one of the most interesting drafts in many years because of this quarterback-rich draft.
Now, Jeff, I want to stay there. I know we're talking Colts here mainly. Colts obviously don't have that need at quarterback since they took Anthony Richardson last year. But I want to dive into just what we've seen since the end of the college football season to where we are now. And it seemed like before the season ended, it was Caleb Williams and Drake May. And then Jaden Daniels, you know, the Heisman Trophy winner. And then now J.J. McCarthy. And we're starting to see all these things where who's going to go number two? Is it J.J. McCarthy? Could be two. Where is all of this coming from? And you being the former GM, who you've been in those draft rooms and you're not paying attention to, you know, this guy's mock draft and all of this stuff. What do we read into this with the essentially Caleb Williams is your number one, but then after that, it's like a weak quarterback class, or there's just that much intrigue with some of these other guys that are kind of pushing Drake May down?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty strong quarterback class.
Okay,
Matt, I really do. And you look at the performance level that these guys have had, and then you factor in that next year's draft at quarterback does not look quite so strong.
Right.
And so that perhaps creates a little more urgency from teams that are looking to add a young quarterback on that rookie quarterback contract, which is really attractive, as the Colts know with Anthony Richardson. When you've got that rookie quarterback on that contract, you can certainly parlay that into building up a great supporting cast around that player. We've seen that with Russell Wilson in Seattle winning Super Bowls, Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City. And so I think that's a big part of the strategy for people like the Vikings and the Broncos, that they want to get that young quarterback, and that helps their salary cap situation immensely. So I do think it's a really good quarterback class, and next year is not so great. And as we've seen, it's pretty rare that top quarterbacks ever get to free agency anymore. Sometimes they'll be traded, but Kirk Cousins was the premier guy this year, and Kirk, a very good player, but really maybe barely a top 10 quarterback in the league overall.
Right.
So it's hard to get those guys. If you get a chance, you want to try to grab them. But then the key is you got to pick the right one. And I think what's really fascinating, you look at what has happened with the 2021 draft.
Yeah, Zach Wilson, exactly.
Wilson is moving on.
Mm-hmm.
So you had five first-round quarterbacks, and only one of those guys, Trevor Lawrence, the number one pick overall, is still with his original team. Zach Wilson's been traded. Trey Lance is gone. Justin Fields, Mac Jones, they've all been traded elsewhere and have had marginal success in the league at best. And so it's a kind of a scary proposition when you need a quarterback and you're going to draft him that high.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what the Colts were thinking last year with Anthony Richardson. He's got great potential, but then he gets hurt and his rookie season is a little bit of a washout. Now he's almost a rookie again, and they really need Anthony Richardson to come on in year two and hope that he's not that guy like that class of 2021.
Right. Jeff Diamond is our guest, former VP and GM of the Minnesota Vikings, former president of the Tennessee Titans as well, former NFL Executive of the Year, always gracious enough to give us some of his time on an annual basis before the draft. And I want you to put that GM hat back on, Jeff. How do you know, this is a general question, I know it's loaded, but how do you know when to trade up? What do you need to see when deciding to give up assets and to get a guy that you couldn't maybe get otherwise? I mean, is it where you're at with your roster? Is it where you're at with your quarterback? How many things go into deciding when to draft up to get a guy that maybe you couldn't get otherwise?
Yeah, I think that's one of the big changes that I've seen in the draft over the many years that I've either participated in drafts or observed drafts through my media work and my NFL agent firm work, is that it used to be really predominantly teams were picking the best player available. And certainly it was a cliche, but really true for especially a lot of the top teams. And I think what's changed in recent years, and maybe part of that is with the cap, part of that is with the urgency to win immediately, that owners are less patient with keeping coaches and GMs. And so I think there's more of a drafting for need, and I think the need emphasis enters into the trade-up equation when teams figure, okay, we've got to find a corner, and so we're going to make that move up for a cornerback, or we're going to make that move up for a quarterback or a wide receiver, and a wide receiver-rich draft that this is. And so it's, I think that's part of it. I think also you look at the passing game, and the quarterbacks are so much more integral to offenses today, even though there are still some very successful teams running the ball, such as the Colts with Jonathan Taylor. We know that. But I think that's where wide receivers have been bid up, not only in terms of their draft position, but contract-wise. And you look at, for example, with our agent firm, we represent Adam Thielen. We signed him about 3 years ago for $16 million a year with the Vikings as a two-time Pro Bowler. Well, here we are 3 or 4 years later, and now the top receivers are in that $25 to $30 million a year range. And Michael Pittman gets a big contract for what was around $23.5 million a year with the Colts. And after they put the franchise tag on him, Justin Jefferson's going to break the bank in Minnesota up here very shortly. We know that it's going to be over $30 million a year. And so the receiver group, meanwhile, the running backs are struggling to get paid. So it's just a fascinating thing how the passing game, and it carries over to pass rushers and guys like Chris Jones getting paid and Nick Bosa. So the dynamic is really in play in terms of the emphasis on the passing game, the emphasis on paying those guys, and it carries over to the draft too. And so we will see. The quarterbacks go early, the wide receivers go early. That's a great wide receiver class with Marvin Harrison Jr. You got Neighbors at Adunze. You got all these great receivers. Brock Bowers is a tight end who has been rumored to the Colts too as a guy they could be potentially looking at. So it's going to be a really fascinating draft to see how things shake out, and I'm excited for this weekend.
Former NFL Executive of the Year right there, that's Jeff Diamond. Follow him on Twitter X at Jeff Diamond NFL. Coach, I got to go around your career a little bit here, okay? I'm going to go back in a couple of drafts and just find out the mindset of an NFL general manager. Patience. You need patience. And a direct result of your being patient is you landed Randy Moss when you're a general manager with the Minnesota Vikings. That's patience. Then we go another year, Jeff Diamond, and you say, hey, I want to be patient. You had a chance to draft Warren Sapp. You took Derek Alexander instead. So the fine line, that slippery slope of being patient but also wanting to pounce on a player, how mind-bending is that for a general manager this time of year?
Yeah, definitely. The Randy Moss situation was really fascinating, and I do a lot of college speaking, and I talk about how that all unfolded and the contract negotiation I had with Randy and his agents. But of course, that was a situation where there were character questions about Randy going back to college. But we were fortunate that we had some inside information. We had a scout who had worked with the Marshall coaches and knew that Randy had no problems off the field during his time at Marshall, and that obviously he was a premier talent. We had him rated as a top five player in that draft, but he started to fall because of the character questions. We thought for sure the Cowboys were going to take him at 7 or 8, but they'd had issues with Michael Irvin, and they passed on him. And all of a sudden, he's dropping way down to us at 21. We were a playoff team, and we were thinking defense at that time. And this is going into our great 15-1 season in 1998. And so we had a really strong offense. We had two great receivers in Chris Carter and Jake Reed. But Randy Moss was such an amazing talent, and just the possibility of running that three wide receiver offense. And so as he was falling in that draft, and I got on the phone with Chris Carter, our all-pro receiver, and I said, Chris, if we draft Randy, will you help mentor him? And Chris said, absolutely. I know what kind of talent he is. And so we go ahead and draft Randy. That was a phenomenal pick. As it turned out, he's Offensive Rookie of the Year, 17 touchdown receptions that season. But then a couple of years earlier, as you mentioned, the Warren Sapp situation. And again, we were one of the teams that got a little scared off on Warren because of some character questions and some alleged failed drug tests. And so we did draft the safer player in Derek Alexander, which turned out not to be the best move in terms of the future of our franchise. Derek was a very good player for us, but Warren Sapp was a future Hall of Fame player. And so it can work both ways. And again, that's where you got to separate the rumors from reality and the smoke screens that are out there this time of year. And so I think it just makes for a fascinating draft experience. And I think it's always a challenge for these GMs to kind of put their head down and respect their grades, respect their ratings, get as much information as they can, but don't buy into the hype out there and the mock drafts and all that. And that's why the mock drafts are never going to be even close to probably 80% correct, because it's just difficult to forecast.
Now, Jeff, I want to go into an area where you talk about the evolution of, 10 years ago, the draft looked like this, and now you look at it now, and everything is changing. And Brock Bowers is kind of one of those polarizing figures because he's a tight end. You don't think about tight end as a top 15, top 10 pick in a typical draft. But, you look at what the Colts did a handful of years ago when they took a guard with Quentin Nelson. You just take the player. You look at the talent. Is Brock Bowers one of those guys when you're looking at and evaluating these guys that you don't really focus on the fact that he's a tight end? You just look at what he can do offensively with the ball in his hands?
Yeah, definitely. And you talk about the tight ends today. They're almost hybrid wide receivers in a lot of cases when you look at the top guys in the league and the Travis Kelce's, the TJ Hockenson's, players like that. And so Brock Bowers is certainly an offensive weapon, and he's a very talented player on a very successful team in Georgia. So I think he is a guy that's going to be of great interest to teams, and will he make the top 10? I think it's very possible that he could be a top 10 player in this draft, and just because of the type of player, the type of weapon that he can be. And so that, again, that makes it really interesting when you compare him with the Malik Nabers, or we know that Harrison Jr. is going to go early, but then you add some of the other receiving talent or tight end talent in the draft. And again, that's what makes it really fascinating to see what teams decide to do and who pans out as the top player. And I think back to the draft in 2020 when the Vikings picked Justin Jefferson. He was the fifth wide receiver taken in that draft. It's unbelievable to think of that.
Right.
And that obviously he's now probably the best receiver in the game. So you just don't know how it's going to turn out. And a lot of it depends on where the player goes and what kind of support system they have and how they are able to adapt to the NFL and to the scheme that they're being taught. And so that's where obviously coaching is a huge part of the equation too.
Jeff, last one for me. Again, Jeff Diamond is our guest, tapping into your former GM experience and just pulling the levers this weekend. How much feeling out do you have to do when it comes to knowing other teams' needs around you. And if you look at the Colts, the Jaguars are right there. They're two picks back of the Colts in round one and round two. In round one, they're 17th. The Colts are 46 in round two. The Jaguars are right there at pick number 48 in the second round. And both of these teams might be looking at cornerback. They might be looking at receivers. So that plays into it, too. There's, you know, two teams close to one another in terms of parity, roster construction, and obviously they're in the same division. As you know, Jeff, how much does that weigh into the back of your mind on what you're doing and keeping an eye on what they're doing and making sure they're not leapfrogging you to get a player that you want that now you don't have to face twice a year? I mean, it's a complicated science. So how do you factor in that part of the draft equation, if you will, when you talk about teams around you that have similar needs?
Yeah, I think you talk about it throughout the draft. And what we would always do is we would, as we get within five picks of our pick, we would always put up five players on the board and kind of think about, well, who might be interested in these players? Who might try to jump us?
Yeah.
What will it take to move up? And as you mentioned, a team such as Jacksonville compared to the Colts, and very strong possibility that both teams are looking at cornerback in this draft, and could they try to jump the Colts and take a Terry and Arnold or whoever the particular cornerback is that is attractive to those teams. So you've got to factor that in. And that's why teams also, even though we mock the mock draft, teams also do mock drafts.
Right.
And kind of walk through, here's what we think could happen. Here's what we think this team's going to do, et cetera, et cetera. And teams are doing that really today in the last couple of days before the draft are kind of looking at that situation because they've got all their final grades. They've got their board set. And now they're thinking about, well, what's going to actually happen and what are the possibilities of moving up and moving down, perhaps, and picking up extra draft picks in a draft. And so we know one of the things I always said in the draft room, there are great players in every round, and there are great players that are going to go undrafted. And I signed John Randall for $5,000
wow.
after the 1990 draft as a defensive tackle coming out of Texas A&I. When he weighed 240 pounds in college, well, by the time he showed up to training camp, he was about 25 pounds heavier from a bunch of heavy weightlifting work that he had done and training work that he had done. And a year later, he's a starter and he ends up in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So you never know where they're coming from. Brady in the sixth round.
Yes.
Yeah.
Scott in the fourth round. It's on and on in terms of history. Joe Montana in the third round. I mean, it can happen. Russell Wilson. So you have to really approach it that way. And there are going to be Pro Bowl players picked in every round.
Check out the 33rdteam.com. That's 33rd, rather, team.com. I hope I said that right. Now I'll say it one more time here once again so I don't screw up the listener. The 33rdteam.com. You can find more Jeff Diamond right there. Again, former vice president and general manager of the Minnesota Vikings, former president and COO of the Tennessee Titans. Feather in your cap on the John Randall thing. I could go another hour on his career, but we don't have time, Jeff. I will say this, from an idiot like me in the upper deck, how about this scenario? And I've talked to my cohorts about this, endlessly, and they think I'm crazy, Jeff, so follow me here. Every other year, you deal your second and third to move up in the first. Every other year, you deal your second and third to move up in the first. Is this arithmetic? Is that doable? Is it possible to have something like that where you're going up for premier, superstar, game-changing players, and every other year you're dealing the middle of your draft?
Well, I think it's a little dangerous because you're going to – there, as I said, there are really good players in the second and third round, and sometimes those players don't come in with quite the arrogance, shall we say, of a first-round pick.
Okay.
And maybe more drive. And so I always liked keeping my second and third and even fourth round picks. But as you said, if there's somebody worth moving up for, then you should do it. And because one thing we know, there are probably 8 to 10 really blue chip players mm-hmm. in every draft.
Yep.
And when I talk about blue chip, I'm talking future all pro type players. And so if you have an opportunity to get one of those guys, and certainly a key part of that is going to be our four quarterbacks going to go in the first five picks. As I said, that pushes down some really great position players.
No doubt.
And so then you take a shot at some of those guys. And that's what really makes the draft fascinating.
Awesome. Well, great stuff as usual. We could talk for hours. Jeff Diamond, former VP and general manager of the Vikings and the Tennessee Titans. Again, the33rdteam.com. If you want to read what Jeff's having to talk about at this upcoming draft, find it from a guy who's been behind the curtain and ran draft rooms. That is you, JD. Appreciate the time. As always, you're one in a million, pal. I love talking to you.
Hey, thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. All the best. And we'll be watching the Colts during the draft and see what they come up with this year.